Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas. It's good to be back with you after dealing with some technical difficulties the past couple of weeks, and I hope you'll enjoy what we have to offer on today's program. Today essentially marks the start of a new era for the Sounds and Sights of Cinema. Now, we're not making any dramatic changes or changing the emphasis of the show. The program's primary goal has always been to introduce listeners to a wide variety of great film music, and that will remain the program's central purpose. However, I felt for a while that it would be possible to do that in a more engaging way than I've done over the past few years. As those of you who have listened to the show for a very lengthy period of time know, for the most part, I've generally done things in a very simple way. Tell you which score I'm about to play, name the composer, play the piece, and move on. For most of the program's run, I've tried to incorporate a movie review at the end of the program as well. Now, I've been listening to the assorted feedback I've received from both WHIE and DVD Verdict listeners for a while now, and there are two conflicting complaints which have cropped up on a regular basis. One group feels the movie reviews are unnecessary and distract from a show which should remain focused on film music. Another group feels that the show should emphasize movie reviews a bit more, or at least a bit more consistently. While attempting to please everyone would undoubtedly create a particularly messy program, these comments aligned with something I've been thinking about for quite some time. Going forward, my hope is to create a happier marriage between the presentation of film music and movie reviews on the program by examining not only pieces of music for their own sake, but further discussing how they work within the context of a film. What a piece of music does to set the tone, establish character, enhance what the film is attempting to do, or even detract from what the film is trying to accomplish. And while the emphasis will remain on film scores, I'll also be featuring songs from time to time, both original tunes written for movies and pre-existing numbers employed in creative ways, as a way of further expanding the scope of the program. I'd like the Sounds and Sights of Cinema to be a deeper, richer, more satisfying experience, a show which truly explores the complex relationship between a film and its soundtrack. Even so, I also want to ensure that this new take on the program doesn't change the fact that the show is primarily about the music, not about the host. So, enough in the way of explanation. Let's get down to business. Today, we're jumping into our musical time machine once again and traveling back to the year 1975. We begin our journey with that year's biggest box office success, a film which terrified and thrilled audiences upon its initial release and remains an immensely satisfying cinematic experience to this day, Steven Spielberg's Jaws, featuring a score by the ever-magnificent John Williams. The Jaws score is often noted for the raw simplicity of the two-note motif at its core, but it's worth remembering that the music is much more complicated than its reputation suggests. Yes, there's that primal two-note idea which represents the shark, but the counterpoint Williams provides is a complex, almost cheerful melody which highlights the film's more adventurous side. Let's take a listen. Thank you. Traces of Bernard Herrmann's music for Psycho in that final piece in that suite of music from Jaws we just featured, penned by Mr. John Williams. Very fine stuff. Next up, music from a paranoid conspiracy thriller, helmed by Sidney Pollack and starring Robert Redford, Faye Dunaway, and Max von Sydow, 3 Days of the Condor. Now, this score was penned by Dave Grusin, who collaborated with Pollack multiple times over the course of his career. It's a score which is absolutely a product of the decade it was written in, but the funky, nervous energy the score offers has considerably more personality than the average thriller score. You'll hear that side of the score first, and then you'll hear the expressive, tender love theme Grusin provided for the film. Enjoy.
Thank you.
That's music written by Dave Grusin for the Sidney Pollack thriller 3 Days of the Condor. The great Sidney Lumet first teamed up with actor Al Pacino earlier in the 1970s for the gritty cop drama Serpico, and the pair would re-team in 1975 for one of the finest films of Lumet's career, Dog Day Afternoon. A riveting crime movie with a surprisingly heartbreaking emotional core, the film is noteworthy for its avoidance of employing music to enhance the drama. In fact, there's only one piece of music used in the entire film, but it's used quite prominently and memorably over the opening credits, a tune penned a few years earlier by Elton John for his western-tinged album Tumbleweed Connection called Amorina.
Lately, I've been thinking, oh, how much I miss. is my lady, our arenas, and I can't sleep. Oh, rising in the daybreak, living like a lusty flower, running to the grass for hours, rolling to the hay. Oh, like a puppy child.
Elton John performing the only piece of music featured in Sidney Lumet's Dog Day Afternoon. Director Clint Eastwood has always been something of a minimalist when it comes to film music. Most of his movies feature low-key scores written by himself, his family members, or his longtime collaborator Lenny Niehaus. However, Eastwood did collaborate with a more traditional film composer back in 1975, employing none other than John Williams to pen a score for the thriller The Iger Sanction. It's considerably different from anything else Williams had penned at the time, and certainly a large contrast to the score for Jaws we featured earlier in the program. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas, and we're featuring film music from the year 1975 on the program today. We just featured music by John Williams, written for Clint Eastwood's thriller The Eiger Sanction, a suite of music which occasionally betrays Eastwood's fondness for jazz in the soundtracks written for his films. Next up, the novels of Alistair MacLean were brought to the big screen on multiple occasions, usually in the form of large-scale, tactically-themed war dramas like The Guns of Navarone and Where Eagles Dare. A much different sort of MacLean adaptation was released in 1975, a western starring Charles Bronson, Ben Johnson, Richard Crenna, and Jill Ireland called Breakheart Pass. Composer Jerry Goldsmith scored quite a few westerns over the course of his career, providing music for movies like The Wild Rovers, Rio Conchos, and Take a Hard Ride. While Breakheart Pass as a whole isn't his most accomplished work in that genre, it arguably features one of his most dynamic western themes. It's a brisk, well-crafted effort, which is still a pleasure to listen to. Let's do that right now. We'll be right back. music by Jerry Goldsmith, written for Breakheart Pass. One of 1975's most entertaining films was The Man Who Would Be King, an action-adventure directed by John Huston and starring Sean Connery and Michael Caine. Huston had actually intended to make the film back in the 1940s with Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart in the lead roles, but production was delayed for decades. It's just as well, I suppose, as the film provided audiences of 1975 with a gloriously old-fashioned throwback and a year featuring a great deal of exceptionally progressive cinema. Connery and Caine are spectacular in the film, and the movie's epic nature is further enhanced by a grand score from composer Maurice Jarre. Jarre was an immensely inconsistent film composer, particularly once he fell in love with synthesizers in the 1980s, but he was certainly a force to be reckoned with when he was on his game. He was most assuredly on his game this time around, as you're about to hear.
Thank you.
music by Maurice Jarre, written for The Man Who Would Be King. That film wasn't Sean Connery's only success in 1975. He also played a memorable role in the John Milius film The Wind and the Lion, which co-starred Candace Bergman. If you thought the Maurice Jarre score we just featured was epic, just wait until you hear Jerry Goldsmith's massive, thrilling music for this film. It's yet another terrific score from the greatest decade of Goldsmith's career, a gem sandwiched between such musical masterpieces as Chinatown and The Omen. It's almost jarringly boisterous, but it works like gangbusters in this sweeping drama. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
yet another fine score from Jerry Goldsmith for the 1975 film The Wind and the Lion. Next up, the works of Raymond Chandler have been brought to the big screen on quite a few occasions. While the quality of the films themselves has been quite inconsistent, movie lovers have been blessed with several superb portraits of Chandler's hero, Philip Marlowe. Dick Powell offered an excellent take on the role in 1944's Murder, My Sweet. Humphrey Bogart quickly followed with an iconic turn in the 1946 adaptation of The Big Sleep, and Elliot Gould delivered a richly entertaining modern take on the character in Robert Altman's 1973 film The Long Goodbye. Viewers were treated to yet another version of Marlowe in 1975, with Robert Mitchum stepping into the role for an adaptation of Farewell, My Lovely. While it could be argued that Murder, My Sweet was a more effective presentation of the same story, Mitchum's portrait of Marlowe was pitch-perfect. It seemed as if the actor was born to play the world-weary, wise-cracking, hard-boiled detective. The film's other significant virtue is its original score, a moody, atmospheric effort by David Shire, which splendidly underlines the tale's smoky mournfulness. We'll conclude today's program with a couple of selections from that fine effort, and I hope you'll join us again next time for more of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema. Until then, have a great week, and I'll be back at you later.